It's good to have Brother Ron leading singing again, just like old times. That's wonderful. If you have your Bibles, I would encourage you and invite you to open to Psalm 52. And we want to notice some specifics about this psalm and some lessons that can be found from it, some principles that will be helpful for us even today. If you have titles listed in your Bible, it will say something like this. To the chief musician, Maskell, a psalm of David, when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul, and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. And this is indeed the case. And we'll read about some of that incident in just a moment. But you know, it's really a strange thing that happened here. Doeg was a despicable man. He was an Edomite. Edomites were traditionally the enemies of Israel from the very beginning, from the time that Jacob and Esau, that Jacob stole his, or didn't steal it, but took his birthright. And there had been antagonism between the two families for centuries. Genesis 25 and verse 30, Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. Genesis 36 and verse 8, statement is made just very plainly, Esau is Edom. There were some problems that began to develop between those people as nations. There's a problem between the brothers, but the problem was much deeper than that. In Numbers chapter 20, verses 14 through 21, as Israel was trying to pass through the land of the Edomites refused. They would not let them through. In Psalm 137, we read of an interesting situation when Jerusalem was destroyed. The Edomites were the principal cheerleaders for the destruction of Israel. Listen to Psalm 137. By the rivers of Babylon where we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. The Babylonians who had taken the southern two tribes captive are now saying, sing us a song of Zion. Be happy, be excited. There's no way they could do that. The psalmist said, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Now look at verse 7. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom, in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. They were excited about and enjoying the prospect of Jerusalem being destroyed. Why? Because of the antagonism that had existed between the two families from the time that Esau sold his birthright. And so here we find Doeg, an Edomite, who is trying to make himself and has made himself a friend of Saul. Why would Saul, being of the Israelite family, why would he trust Doeg in the first place? Why is he even there? Well, it begs a lot of questions. The Bible says a lot about the Edomites. God said about them in Psalm 60 and verse 8, and there's a parallel in Psalm 108 and verse 9. The same thing is said in both places. God said, Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. That was a Hebrew idiom that implied a great deal of disgust and disdain for Edom, for the Edomites, even though they were proud. In Jeremiah 49, verse 17, Edom shall be a desolation. Everyone that goeth by it shall be astonished and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof. Joel wrote in Joel 3:19, Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, because they shed innocent blood in their land. So not only was there this antagonism, but there was actually violence and bloodshed. The whole book of Obadiah is a prophecy against Edom. I'll get it in a moment. Is that the whole book is a prophecy against Edom for what they have done and giving a list of the things that have been done to the Israelites. It's worth a read. Through Malachi, the Lord said that Edom had boasted that they would return and they would rebuild their land, but God said, yeah, you go ahead and do it and I will destroy it. God was going to judge them, and that judgment was going to last. In view of this, as I said before, it seems really strange that Doeg would have ever been accepted, and especially that he was made a person of authority under King Saul, but he was. He was a man of authority. But you know, when you think about that, you think about David. When David was on the run from Saul, David did something that was really strange. He went down to the Philistines because Saul was after him, and he convinced Achish, the king of Gath, which is one of the five lordships of the Philistines, he convinced him that he was on their side. He lived with him for over a year, and Achish was going to take David out into battle against the Israelites and the other four lordships, the leaders of the other four cities, principal cities of the Philistines. They came out and said, what is this Hebrew doing with us? Get rid of him. He's not going. Achish said, what are you talking about? Paraphrasing, he's been here living with me and I trust him. He's done what I need him to do. They said, we don't care. He's a Hebrew. Send him back. And David was not going to ultimately fight with him. We know that, but he was sent back. One thing led to another. David eventually became king of Israel and then defeated the Philistines. So it is the case that sometimes people of a different nation would endear themselves to a foreign nation and convince them that they had switched sides. It's kind of like people switching political parties today, right? Now, this is one nation against another. It was a little bit deeper than that. So what is Doeg doing there? So let's look at our text. Let's look at Psalm 52 and look at this despicable person. And what we're going to find there is the deceitfulness of pride, first of all. Look at verses 1 through 4. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. The tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. From 1 Samuel 21 and verse 7, we find that Doeg was the chiefest of the herdsmen that belonged to Saul. In 1 Samuel 22 and verse 9, we're told that he was set over the servants of Saul. This was a high position. And here was a man who had ambition. He wanted more. And he was willing to do whatever it took to get what he wanted. The proverb writer said in Proverbs 19 and verse 10, delight is not simply for a fool, much less for a servant to have rule over princes. The idea is that you take a person who is used to guarding the cattle or guarding the flocks, and you put them in the position of authority like a king or next in line to a king, and you're going to have problems because he didn't grow up knowing how to rule, how to manage, and he's going to cause trouble. In Proverbs 29 and verse 2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked bear rule, the people mourn. So we find a similar principle that's there. Well, he says, thy tongue, verse 2, the tongue deviseth mischiefs. In James chapter 3, this is basically what we read here, beginning at verse 5. He said, the tongue, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. We're going to go back in a minute and see exactly how that plays out with Doeg. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men. God, curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Why does it happen? Well, it happens with people of ambition, people that are filled with pride. Proverbs 16 and verse 18, Solomon said, pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. In Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, he says, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift, running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. Now, Doeg went further than just sowing discord among the brethren. Doeg's tongue brought about an unprecedented calamity. Let's look at that. 1 Samuel chapter 22. Let's see what this is all about and why David wrote what he did. Because David was the object of the murderous heart of Doeg. Didn't get him, but he was trying. 1 Samuel 22, verse 9. A lot of history has passed up to this point. David had gone to Ahimelech, and he had received the things that we're going to read about here. And Saul is still looking for him. Nobody will sell out David except this enemy of the Hebrew people, this Doeg. So let's just see what he did. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath, the Philistine. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech, the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, Hear now, thou son of Ahitub. And he answered, Here I am, my lord. And Saul said unto him, Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise up against me to lie in wait as at this day? Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house? Now, you remember that David had already proven to Saul that he wasn't going to kill him. David had already proven that he was the righteous man. He was the one that was innocent. And Saul mourned over what he had tried to do to David, or he would do so. Verse 15, Did I then begin to inquire, Ahimelech says, of God for him? Be it far from me. We would say, No, I didn't. Not a chance. He continues, Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. And the king said, Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. No evidence. Whatever happened to presumed innocent until proven guilty? Ahimelech said, I didn't do anything wrong. Doeg said, You did all of these things for David. Ahimelech said, No, I didn't do it. Where are the other witnesses? Where's the fairness? Where's the justice? Well, was all there was none. But listen, the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand is also with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. Let me tell you something. If the priests were with David, the prophet, and everyone else was with David, Saul should have said, You know what? Maybe I need to just back off. But he didn't. He said, Instead, let me just kill all the opposition. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priest of the Lord. Wise move on their part. I mean, there comes a point when party loyalty doesn't matter anymore. There comes a point when you've got to say, Enough is enough. And they were servants of the king, and the king could have ordered their deaths, but they wouldn't do it. But look at verse 18. And the king said to Doeg, Turn thou and fall upon the priest. You Edomite, you enemy of God's people to start with. My servants won't do it, so you do it. And he didn't hesitate. You think part of that was because he was an Edomite? It may very well have been. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. So he killed 85 priests personally. It wasn't that he sold out David and then realized the danger that the priest had been put in and then tried to back it down, back away from it. He killed them. How do you kill 85 priests of the Lord in this period, wiping out an entire city of priests? How do you do that? Unless you don't care anything about the Lord, and you don't care anything about His anointed, and you don't care anything about His people. And Nob, the city of priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, smote he. Who was the he? Doeg. Smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and suckling, oxen and asses and sheep, with the edge of the sword. Well, one of them escaped, went and told David. David told him, stay with me and I'll protect you. And the story continues. But this one, we're calling him Doeg the Despicable. I mean, it's one thing for him to say, well, I saw David. Does that get me points with the king? The king says, kill all the priests. Doeg doesn't try to do anything to intervene. He just says, okay. Nobody else will do it. The king tells him to do it. So he does. He kills them all. What kind of person does that? So when David writes about him, verse 3, he says, thou lovest evil more than good. That's the hallmark characteristic of people that do not like to retain God in their knowledge, as Paul described them in Romans 1 and verse 28. His whole heart is overwhelmed to selfish greed. He's a lover of the world and not God, 1 John 2 and verse 15. This type of person makes his own will his law. He turns a deaf ear to correction, to warning, to divine truth, to mercy, to love, to any of those things. But there's nothing positive you can say about Doeg. We say Doeg is an Edomite. The Edomites were trouble. Yeah, he was trouble and more. But David says this kind of person, he boasts of the evil that he does. He's not ashamed of his wickedness. He's greedy over every form of mischief, especially if he thinks he can profit from it. And that's what Doeg was trying to do. He loves speaking falsely rather than telling the truth. He doesn't care. He doesn't care anything about who he hurts with his words as long as he can gain something from it, as long as he can be promoted, and depends upon his riches to carry him through. Number two, look at the destruction of the proud as David describes it in verses 5-7. He said, God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living, Selah, which is a musical pause. Then verse 6, the righteous also shall see him and fear and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. Verse 5, the first point he makes is that judgment is sure. You compare Proverbs 2 and verse 22, and the wording is almost the same here. So in this psalm, the image is, or one image is added to another, and the metaphors, they rise in force. He's going to be defeated. There's going to be an expulsion. There's going to be an extinction of his family. They're going to be rooted out. They're going to be removed from the land. So this person who thought he was so great, this person who thought he was going to profit by what he was doing, this person who didn't care about killing the priests of God, he's going to be destroyed, ruined, and his family with him. No one's going to be left. So yeah. Be lifted up with your pride. Enjoy what you've got for a moment because it's only going to be temporary. And you're not going to live forever, but God lives forever and his justice is forever and God will judge you. God will judge you. He was going to lose his home, his life, and his reputation. What must be the end of every kind of every such person? Romans 11 and verse 22. We're reminded that the end of every such person will be judgment, will it not? What did Paul say there? He said, behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. Talking about the Israelites in context. He said, on them which fell, severity. But toward thee, goodness, if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou shalt be cut off. As the Jews had been cut off to bring in the Gentiles for salvation. But he says here, behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. And David says here that the severity of God was going to come to meet Doeg, the despicable man that he was. And implied all who would be like him. Paul said in Galatians 6, be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. But I love what he says there, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Doeg didn't care. He had deceived himself. People that live with arrogant pride usually have done the same thing. They have deceived themselves, elevated themselves in their own estimation, whether God has elevated their position or not. It's the root cause of every wicked person's demise, and that is what we read here in verse 7. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. He had prospered in his wickedness. He saw no reason to stop. He would continue on. When you go back to Psalm 1, the introductory psalm to all of these, you find that principle stated. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. So the happy man, the happy person, is the person that puts his trust in the Lord, but the person that does not do so, something evil is going to come. He continues that the righteous, he should be like a tree planted by rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, that's old Doeg, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked, the way of sinners, it shall perish. And that's exactly what David is saying about Doeg. You have murdered those 85 priests and their families and everything that you've taken and destroyed everything that belonged to them. But God's judgment lasts forever. Well, then finally, number 3. Notice the devotion to God's goodness that David finds, verses 8 and 9 as we close. He said, but I'm like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Now, David wrote this, and during this episode, David is running for his life. If Doeg could have killed David, nothing would have given him greater joy. And he would have thought it would have advanced his position with Saul. But David says, in spite of all of those things, no matter when the psalm was written, if it was very close to this period or sometime afterward, David is still saying, but I put my trust in you. I trusted in you. And because of that, I was blessed. He said, I'm a green olive tree. Remember back in Psalm 1, we read about the tree that was by the river of waters that its leaf would bring forth, and it had all of the moisture that it needed. It was healthy. It was always there. It was flourishing. Here David says, I am the green olive tree. Well, but he was running for his life at that time. But he knew things were going to be better. Why did he pick the olive tree? The olive tree was remarkable, both for its beauty and for its usefulness. The fruit of the tree was good for food, but the fruit of this tree was also used for the lamps. The pure olive oil was used to burn in the lamps in the tabernacle and in the temple. That's Exodus 27:20 and Leviticus 24:2. But not only that, the pure olive oil was used to be a base for that which was mixed by the apothecary to create the holy oil that was used to anoint kings and to anoint the furniture and the things of the tabernacle and the temple. And so olive oil played a central role to the life of the Hebrew nation. In Habakkuk 3 and verse 17, Habakkuk speaks of the labors of the olive tree. Jeremiah 11 and verse 16 speaks about the olive tree and its goodly fruit. In Hosea 15 and verse 6, Hosea remarks of the beauty of the olive tree. And therefore, it was a fitting symbol of God's special people who were adorned with the beauty and holiness and who bear fruit to the praise of God. And that's what we're to do, isn't it? You know, Jesus talked about being the vine and we are the branches, and that he expects us to bear fruit. What kind of fruit are we to bear? We are to bear fruit to the Lord, as he has brought and offered salvation to this world. We are to share that message with others and bring others to him. Not to try to destroy anyone else so that we can advance our position or so that we can feel better about ourselves, because we have a self-esteem issue and we have to do that to feel better. I don't know what Doeg's issue was. Was it because he was an Edomite and he just didn't really care and he hated God's people anyway? Did he have a self-esteem issue and just feel like he needed a pat on the back? Did he do something, feel that he needed to do something to better secure his position? Why was he doing it? I don't know, but he was a despicable person. He ratted out those priests. And then he murdered them. What a terrible person. He was an opportunist whose loose tongue caused the death of many innocent people. But don't forget that it was his sword, and it was him with his sword that killed these people. He was an Edomite, allowed, even ordered by Saul, to kill the priest of the Lord. Now you compare that with David. David and his men are hiding in the side of a cave at one point. Saul comes in to take care of things. David's men tell him, God's delivered him into your hand. Kill him. David said, no, I'm not going to kill the Lord's anointed. He cut off the end of his robe, his skirt, the King James calls it, of his garment. And then when Saul went out, David came out and fell down upon his face. Called him the Lord's anointed and said, see what I've got? If I'd wanted to kill you, I could have killed you. Did this on two occasions. If I'd wanted to kill you, I could have killed you. On one occasion, Saul began to weep and say, you're much more righteous than I am. But these priests were already dead. They were already dead. Doeg may have been Saul's friend, but he wasn't the Lord's friend. He wasn't any friend of righteousness. David was the true friend of Saul because David stood up for him. And do you remember that even when Saul was killed on Mount Gilboa with Jonathan, his son, whom David loved dearly, that a man came back to tell David about it? And he lied. He said that he had taken Saul's life because Saul had been badly wounded. And David had him killed because he said, paraphrasing, how dare you lift your hand against God's anointed? Saul had this Edomite raise his hand against those priests. But David would not raise his hand against the one who was chasing him down, hunting him like a dog, trying to kill him. Who was right in all of it? Ambition is dangerous and it can be deadly. By contrast, David did the right thing. He always did. And he overcame because he always trusted in the Lord. And that's why he said here in the last two verses, I'm like a green olive tree in the house of the Lord. Why? I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Psalm 52. I wonder how many times when the children of Israel would sing that psalm that they would go back and think about the tragedy of that day. You know, we think about Pearl Harbor and we think about terrible events, 9/11 and things like that. See, that psalm was something that they would sing. Sometimes they would sing it during worship. And they knew what it meant. And I would presume that they would lament those people that had died. And the fact that Saul would have trusted an enemy within his ranks to do that kind of thing to the people that God had chosen to do his service. Doeg was a despicable man. But David was a righteous man. Who would you want to be your friend? Certainly not Doeg. But you'd want someone like David to be your friend because he would stand up for you when you did what was right. And he would be a true friend in any situation. And David felt that that was the relationship that he had to God, that God was his friend in any situation. As a Christian, we can have that same feeling, knowing that God is our friend. You know, the Bible says that Jesus is not afraid to call us his brethren. There is no friend like Jesus Christ. But is he your friend tonight? Have you been obedient to the gospel of Christ? Are you living faithfully? If not, why not change that? Would you come as we stand and as we sing?